Okay, welcome to this fortnight's, I should say, Open the Podbay Doors news special. Let's do a quick time check. It is 2 p.m. on Monday, the 22nd of February. I'm one of your hosts, Ian Gardner.
I'm Faden Stow. So what's been going on, mate? It's been such a crazy 6 weeks. I missed the last episode.
You did miss the last one.
You did an awesome job on that.
Yeah,
thank you. So you've been up to a lot lately. We ran our first in-person virtual event, the new hybrid.
Yeah, we did a hybrid event, we should call it. So, we were in Macquarie Bank's fabulous auditorium in Sydney. We had 30 people there. We had Grant McCarthy from Tidal. We had Jackie Villens from Airtree. And we had Alex McCauley from Startup Oz. And we were talking about the seed funding gap. 30 people in the crowd in Sydney. Great crowd. Knew a lot of them. So, it was nice to see some familiar faces. And about 120 people dialed in from all around the country. So, we put it out on Zoom. And I think the model worked well.
And you can still watch it on Zoom, which is a great thing. I think Claire did a great job of putting all the pieces together, the mixed sort of broadcasting and in-person, all that sort of stuff. It's great.
Yeah, no, it's been great.
You did really well hosting it. Some great questions out there. And it was really informative. We had a lot of good feedback from it so far.
Yeah, it's been great. So that's going to be our model for the rest of the year. So every month, it's not going to be every week like we were last year, but every month, we will be doing one of these hybrid breakfast events. And the good thing about this format is we can take it on the road. So I think March we're going to do in Sydney, April in Melbourne, May I think we'll coincide with South Star in Adelaide. And then, you know, TBC. But it's pretty exciting that we've got this new format.
And we're looking for studios. We're looking for spaces that can accommodate the hybrid.
Yeah, so if you're listening and you've got ideas, drop us a note. We would love to hear from you.
Now, just quickly, we just recorded the podcast, the news podcast. Who did we have on the show?
Yeah, we had a great podcast. Really enjoy doing these. So, first of all, we had Amanda Coombs. So, Amanda is one of our Horizon Club. So, she is an angel investor. She's a Horizon Club member, which is our new angel investor club based in Melbourne.
Which we just launched. How significant and awesome was the launch of our Horizon?
Oh, it was so good. Yeah. No, we basically curated the, you know, some, you know, we're biased because we love our members, but we've got 10 members in Sydney, 10 in Melbourne, and we're bringing curated deal flow on specific topics to them. So we did it in AgriTech last few weeks.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Fantastic format. Just a great group of people. Sam did a great job of bringing all the pieces together. CJ did an amazing run sheet. I mean, exceeded expectations. The expectations were high.
Yeah, no, we've definitely set the bar very high for our next ones because the startups were great and the way that we ran the day I think was great, but and a lot of fun, like really, really good fun.
It was a lot of fun.
So Amanda was part of that. So yeah, she joined us. So she's pretty amazing, like really good insights. We also had Kevin Baum, if I pronounced that right. Kevin is one of the co-founders at AgriWeb, along with Justin Webb, who's been in this show a couple of times. So yeah, lovely guy, very smart, building a great business. He's actually heading off to the US in a few weeks to live.
Well, they just closed another round. What was the round? I think 28. Was
that right? 30 million. I think it was in the US, but 30 million Aussie. So big round. They're doing well. I mean, it's farm management software. I think Justin calls it Tinder for cows, but I don't think that's quite right. I don't think cows can swipe too well.
And he's off to Denver. So, I mean, Aussie big cohort in Denver seem to be forming right now of Australians over there, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah. No, look, it's great. You know, I think the next sensible move for AgriWeb is to go overseas. And, you know, often if you want to be successful launching overseas, you have to send one of your co-founders. So Kevin put his hand up. So good on him. We'll miss him. Yeah. He's been a great influence and a member of our Summit Club.
Yeah.
And then our third guest was Jared Kendler. So Jared is senior at New South Wales Treasury, was been part of Jobs New South Wales and, you know, really the sort of core part of the government's efforts to promote startups. So he was kind of in charge of the whole startup hub and, you know, what's coming up with a new tech precinct. So pretty interesting. It was the first, I didn't realize until we invited him, but our first ever guest from New South Wales government. So it's good to get them being a bit more visible and vocal. So yeah, Jared had a few interesting comments on or thoughts on New South Wales and what they're doing and what other states are doing. So that was pretty interesting.
This gigantic tech hub they're building.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. You know, I think the Atlassian coming in, I think they announced last year they're going to build this 50-story wooden skyscraper, which just sounds amazing. Yeah, what else? Anything else before we jump to it or should we just get over to the show?
I think we get onto it. There's a great run of news to discuss.
Yeah, there is. So lots of stuff on Facebook and the News Code to kick off with. So let's get over to the panel and we'll hear from them there. All right, everyone, we are here with our fabulous panel. So we got Kevin Baum, Amanda Coombs, and Jared Kendler, as we said before. So, and Faden. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. I'm just the last one, so I'm just happy to be back on the show again.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you back. I'm sure the last one was terrible without you.
That was excellent. Very well.
All right, let's get into the news. And look, you can't look too far beyond the press and the startup media around the news bargaining code and the goings on between Facebook, Google, news, the government, a few howls of protest from some independent publishers. I mean, it's a complicated status. Look, as of now, it looks like News Limited has done a deal with Google, and Google's done some deals with The Guardian and I think a couple of others as well. So they seem to be off on their own, just trying to get it sorted. Facebook looks like they've thrown their toys out of the cot and said, "Nah, you're not having our toy. We're going home and taking our ball with us." So, Amanda, what is going on here from your perspective as an investor and, ex or still slightly current corporate person?
Well, I think at first pass, Ian, it seems difficult to ask Facebook to send news companies traffic and also pay to do so. So I understand that the media bargaining code is sort of trying to solve for really a different impact, which is the fact that, through Google and Facebook companies, Australians spend 40% of their time online with one of those companies. So that then weakens our local media. So I think what they're really trying to do is solve for that monopoly issue. And they're doing it sort of on a sideways angle, which is just not elegant. So Facebook has definitely thrown their toys out. They haven't done a very good job in building brand credibility. But at the same time, I think that the Australian government has probably marked up a little bit here too. I think you can sort of look to the French model where they insist upon a certain amount of content being locally sourced, and that's probably a more elegant way of solving for what is really central to this issue.
Yeah, but it's definitely hard. I was listening to some sort of punters out there, so like the normal, folk, everyday folk who literally rely on Facebook for news consumption. It's hard for them. It's also hard for the smaller publishers. Like I think I was listening to Bernard, who's the publisher at Crikey. And they were using Facebook to drive a lot of traffic to their website. And I think you're right, Amanda. It's like, it felt like the government was trying to get, force Facebook to double dip or them to double dip. So, pay for traffic or support the sites, but also pay them cash to have the privilege. So it doesn't surprise me. What also doesn't surprise me is Facebook's sort of slightly clumsy reaction. I mean, I don't think Facebook is despite its size and market clout, they don't seem to be masters of the PR spin. So any thoughts on their PR side, Amanda, before we move on to Kevin? But you go, Amanda.
I think poor execution is sort of, and that sort of emotional reaction is part of their culture, I guess, or their history of reacting to situations like this. Just picking up on your point, Ian, of the Crikey as an example, I think what we're really doing here through this media bargaining code is we're actually assisting very large news corps. And Facebook, where the consumer is not the one that is really being protected here through this process. So if you look to the Indian example, which is, as I understand it, Facebook's biggest marketplace with 320 million users, the way that they've gained that is by actually offering internet access if you sign up. And that's why so many, in that instance, I think there is a moral requirement to not pull the pin like they have in Australia. Whereas if you look to Crikey, could Crikey not simply, couldn't people go directly? I don't see the issue in Australia. I think people can source their news directly or through an aggregator which Facebook now is.
Kevin, you're running a startup here, so I mean, what's your view on this? Or what would you be doing if you were in government?
The issue of whether Facebook and Google and Microsoft and companies like that hold monopolistic power is an incredibly important one right now. I think there are good faith arguments to be made around their control over the free internet that are problematic. But as sometimes happens, whether or not this is ill-intentioned or good intention legislation or not, I don't know. How involved was Rupert Murdoch in pushing this? I don't know. But they've completely missed the mark on this, and it violates all the principles of what a free internet is. To the points being made, like, right now, Google and Facebook are driving huge amounts of traffic to these organizations, which is incredibly important at a time when traditional journalism is suffering. Newspapers themselves are folding left, right, and center. People are getting laid off, and newspapers haven't quite figured out how to crack monetization on the internet. I appreciate that maybe we're trying to support these organizations, but doing it in this way is ridiculous. And I think the stats have already come out that Facebook's, little hissy fit that they're throwing has already cut traffic by about 25%. 95% of the volume that was going through Facebook overnight has disappeared. Like, this is not going to help these companies. And it seems like they just don't understand how the modern digital internet works right now, if this is what they want. It's seriously problematic. And again, there are legitimate arguments. If you want to have a conversation around what Google's doing with, say, snippets, where they're like pulling explicit content out of articles, putting them at the top of your search results so that you're not actually leaving the Google ecosystem. Like, that's kind of a blurry area. I'm not even sure where I sit on that, because, in this situation, they're not actually driving the traffic. They're taking your content. They're taking what people have put together. They're not adding the user to your website. So maybe that's an argument to be had, but the fact that when Google agreed to start paying News Corp and 7 and 9, the fact that suddenly they don't care anymore about some of the other terms within this law, like, make me question how good faith it was and how much of it was just a borderline extortion.
Jared, I know you work for the New South Wales government, so it's kind of hard for you to comment officially with your job hat on, but have you got any personal views in this one?
Yeah, no, thanks. I think the key thing from a government perspective, and I'm not going to comment on the legislation, but what it does raise is the importance that we have from a government perspective, both at a federal and a state level, that we're looking at the impact of the ongoing impact of future business models on different industries. I think this is a good example of the kinds of challenges we're going to continue to have in lots of kinds of industries as we digitize, as we innovate, and that we need to ensure that as governments that we've got people working on these different challenges that are able to help navigate what are very, very tricky issues.
Yeah, no, this is it's a really thorny issue. I mean, it's quite hard for me even to think about how to couch it, because it is extremely complicated. I don't know whether we should dwell too much on this. We could probably spend the entire episode talking about this, but we might leave it to those that are slightly better qualified than us as mere startup founders, investors, and punters.
I think maybe just Ian, one thing to follow up with, question mark for us is how it's going to change how we consume content. It's going to be pretty interesting moving forward. I don't know about everyone else in the room.
Well, has it changed you? I mean,
what I understood from a lot of the content over the weekend was a lot of people are now going direct to their news sources rather than using aggregators. And then that's obviously a good thing for smaller businesses and probably not a great thing for some of the bigger publishers. Yeah. I'm not quite sure. But I was just curious, who consumes their content via Facebook here? Because I don't.
No, we're probably the leading indicators. And I don't know about you guys, but I moved Facebook off my homepage, and I'm definitely using Facebook a lot less than I used to. And I think there's a danger here that they kind of had, to an extent, shot themselves in the foot, because people will realize that you can get your news elsewhere and you don't need to be as reliant on Facebook. And they're maybe not as good a player in this ecosystem as they think they are.
Kevin raised a good point before too, I think, which is, you know, we're seeing media change very quickly here. And I think we did have a news podcast about 2 months ago where we're talking about media changes and the fact that, you know, we're seeing a resurgence of like content 2.0, you know, in some ways. Where are people happy to pay for content now? You know, we are with the information and other platforms like that where we get really strong content, but we don't really pay for, you know, the Australian anymore, for example.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting space. And, you know, the question for me is, how is this going to change how we consume content moving forward?
And is it also, Faden, going to consolidate things? Because people might be willing to pay for, say, 4 subscriptions, but not 10. And through the aggregators, they've had access to 10. So does that mean that the small players actually get eked out even further? And our news is therefore a narrower lens, which is in itself dangerous.
I mean, there are, sorry, Jed, I'll jump to you in a sec, but there are other, there's local startups who are playing in this space. Like there's one called Inkl, I-N-K-L. Gautam's been around. I mean, he used to be the head of strategy at Fairfax and he's been running Inkl for, I think, 6 or 7 years. He pitched at Innovation Bay a while ago. And they're basically aggregating different news sites and rolling it up into a paid subscription model across the platform. So I think he's got a chance of doing well out of this, because I think, to your point, Amanda, people are limited in the, you know, how many streaming services are you using? You know, people talked about cutting the cord from your cable channel, but we're probably spending more in, you know, the 5 or 6 streaming services that we had than before. And I think there is going to be a limit in that. And I think it's going to be the same for news. So, Jared, sorry, you were going to jump in there.
Look, I think, yeah, I was just going to say, I think that point you raised there around is this is going to create opportunities for some. So that's always a good thing. It's kind of this, if it creates opportunities for further innovation and people to rethink around what is the right way or what is a new business model for us to be accessing news. But at the same time, to Amanda's point, we need to constantly be thinking about the unintended consequences of any decisions and just be making sure that as governments and those in the ecosystem, that we're thinking about those unintended impacts as well.
What kind of scares me a little bit here is, you know, is this Rupert Murdoch's play? You know, and how in the pocket is the Australian government, especially the federal government, of Rupert Murdoch, you know, and it's kind of, we're stuck between two interesting empires and monopolies here in some ways. But I think if I was had to choose between one or the other, you'd probably go down the Zuckerberg route than the Murdoch route.
Jared's points around the unintended consequences is really important. I think about that a lot as a smaller business, as a founder. So many of these well-intentioned regulations, particularly ones that you see coming out of Europe, what they end up doing is just furthering the monopolistic power of the groups that they're trying to push back. Like my brother has worked at Google Legal for a decade, and he constantly talks about Microsoft is a huge fan of so many of these regulations because they know that they can afford the cost required to comply with them, and it actually prevents smaller companies from coming up. So yeah, there's a challenge in unintended consequences. And I guess the other comment I wanted to make is I am very interested in an optimistic view. I do hope this changes the way we think about paying for and consuming content. It's just unnatural right now. And I think there's almost like a user behavior shift that needs to happen. But like, theoretically, as a consumer of content, I prefer the ability to be able to pay for explicitly what I want and not have to sift through the morass of everything that gets thrown at you, whether it's in television, whether it's reading or whatever. And I feel like we're now in the first era in human history where the problem is not access to information. The problem is the ability to parse the information that you have access to, because there's so much out there. And so if you can be a little more decisive and choosy about what you're paying for, and the price is commensurate to the value you're getting, that's awesome. It's just so foreign to me. I still struggle. It's just weird to be like, oh, I have to pay for a subscription for this, newsletter or whatever it is. I just don't have the muscle memory for it. So maybe there's an unintended consequence here that will further that instinct in people.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's right. And Faden, you and I have talked about this a lot. I mean, we for Innovation Bay for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, we've always had this idea, like, wouldn't it be cool to have a publication, you know, and actually to go out and sell it. But publishing is hard. I mean, my very first startup 20 years ago was in that space, and it's a really difficult model. I mean, subscriptions are hard and advertising's hard. There's no great answer to do it. But ultimately it's super important. You know, so it's something that has to be solved. Any last words on this point before we move on?
Well, I think we should have a prediction, shouldn't we? How's this going to play out?
Since predictions. Well, yeah, Kevin.
I'm not sure why they – I'm surprised that they buckled like they did, but, I mean, you're already hearing about how this has empowered other countries, Canada, the EU. Different places are like, oh, this is a thing now. It's time for us to enact our own legislation. So I'm really surprised that Google buckled like they did, other than maybe they're concerned about the bigger picture of the antitrust, which is their primary legal concern, that if them and Facebook shut off traffic to the internet, it kind of proves to a degree their power. But I'm very surprised they did that. And I do feel like the future holds a whole lot more of these cases. The precedent has been set now.
I mean, I'm with you on that. I think it was less surprising that Google buckled. So without news, their core search product is less valuable. I mean, I think that was the punchline for them. So the gun to their head was more compelling than the gun to Facebook's head was just about, well, we're going to lose 4% of our traffic and probably bugger all impact on our revenue and hang the, reputation's already a bit shit. So who cares?
Facebook has never been one to understand human emotion.
Yeah.
How people react.
Amanda, any predictions here?
I think in the media bargaining code, the piece that has to stay and therefore hopefully sense will prevail is the piece about forward warning of algorithm changes.
Yeah.
So I hope that remains. I think that sticks. I think there'll be hopefully some negotiation around the other elements. And to Kevin's point, I mean, Facebook doesn't really care about the way they're perceived and the way they react to the market. But what will hurt them is if India comes in behind Scott Morrison, and then I think they will come to the table. I think to save face and just to quieten things down, they'll probably come to the table, but I think it will not really be particularly impactful and financially impactful for our local media.
Yeah. Jared, last word on this one to you.
Yeah, look, I think there will be agreements reached across the board here in Australia, but the key backdrop will be what is actually happening in the rest of the world. You know, the bigger macro story here is, as Kevin mentioned, it's the antitrust in the US, but it's also in for many countries from a government perspective who haven't seen the tax revenue come in their local countries from many of these large technology companies. And that's, you know, potentially this could just be the start of a rolling suite of government actions around the world that looks to address that.
Yeah. All right. Look, Jerry, thanks everyone for that. I think that was a fascinating insight and discussion. We might stick with you, Jared. And I asked this before we switched the mics on, but there's no real news around this, but we've never had anyone from the New South Wales government on the news podcast. So it's great
to
have you here.
Glad to be the first.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's and it's excellent. Can you maybe give us some insight? So, thinking about, you're coming to us from the 11th floor of the Sydney Startup Hub, which has been the HQ of, Jobs for New South Wales and now Treasury, for quite a while now. I think the lease in that building's up in a year and a half. At the same time, you've been building out this new tech precinct, which looks amazing. So do you want to just give us, an overview as to where the Sydney or New South Wales startup ecosystem is at with reference to, the startup hub and the precinct?
Yeah, no, thank you. I've got the pleasure of having sort of two roles in New South Wales government. The first is to grow and develop two innovation districts here in Sydney. So Tech Central, which you're referencing there, which is from a geographic perspective, really everything from Central to Everleigh. And also Westmead Health and Innovation District. And I guess the second part of my job is looking at and working across New South Wales government on different programs and initiatives that will support the innovation ecosystems across the state. And it's important that those sort of two parts of my role are together, because ultimately, as we try and develop these innovation districts here in Sydney, they're about, and they're going to be as successful as the ecosystems we create in them, but also where we draw from. You know, as we have, for example, Kevin on this podcast as well. It's important for us to be tapping into innovation networks in regional areas across the state. There's brilliant ideas being and businesses being formed all across New South Wales, and we need to make sure that we've got the programs and supports necessary to ensure that. Companies like AgriWeb are able to be supported on their journey. And as we look to get some concentration of technology startups and scale-ups in places like Tech Central. And I guess sort of to your other point for us, you know, as I sit here in the Sydney Startup Hub, this has really been our MVP for how we go about creating innovation ecosystems here in New South Wales. We've learned a lot from our experiences here over the last couple of years, and we need to make sure we take those forward into what is going to be two very much expanded innovation districts. So, you know, for us, it's an exciting time. You know, the biggest sort of news in Tech Central over the last 6 months has been the announcement that we did last year that Atlassian will be moving their headquarters to just by a central station there. I guess another exciting thing we're working on at the moment is the opening of a scale-up hub later this year. So if you think you're in the Sydney Startup Hub, it's for early stage startups, once you sort of get to a certain stage, that we think there's an opportunity for there to be a similar kind of supported model from incubators and accelerators that can help in that growth. And so that will be an 8,000 square meter scale-up hub somewhere close to Central Station there that will help in that next stage of growth for many of the successful companies we have here in New South Wales.
And Jared, how does it all look in, I don't know, 5 years' time? Like, is the startup hub in the location it's in, is it still going to be there? You know, how much of the new tech precinct is going to be up and running by then? So, I mean, what's it going to look like in the 5 years?
Yeah. I guess some of the locations of our different hubs we're still, I guess, working through. It's not just about what we're doing here in the Harbour City. I guess we're also in the process of opening a Western Sydney startup hub as well, out by Parramatta North. We've also got a network of different startup hubs, incubators and accelerators that we support across the state. I guess my main focus and the team's focus is how do we start to connect those up into an ecosystem so that we're actually, they're not operating as, you know, individual kind of bodies, that we've got this connected up ecosystem as we grow into places like Tech Central, that the community is already working together and getting the benefits of being connected.
Yeah.
So yeah, 5 years. Let me do my prediction there. We'll have at least five major technology companies who have significant presence there, like Atlassian. We'll have 100 scale-ups who will call Tech Central home. We'll have 25,000 additional students graduating from our universities there with STEM and light sciences backgrounds, engineering backgrounds. And hopefully it's going to be a great place to live and work. And for me, that's going to be one of the exciting things to see, is that transformation of the southern part of our CBD there. I'd say for Westmead Health Innovation District, it's some of those same goals, but obviously with very much with a health focus. We've seen at the moment with COVID-19, the importance of Westmead as a centre for the delivery of health services in the state. We have the COVID-19 vaccine rolling out there today, but we've got this great opportunity for us to build on innovations in medtech, in the delivery of health services, and we've got this opportunity now where we're, because of how well we've done with COVID, many leading life sciences firms and biomeds are looking down at Sydney as a great place to continue to grow.
Yeah. I might ask a question that might be unfair or impossible for you to answer, but sort of Kevin or Amanda can probably jump in. But, you know, and it's the view of the politicians. So like, you're not a politician, you're not elected to this role. So you've been in this job. So you're doing what, you know, the politicians and I suppose the voters that put them in are. But is there enough focus from the politicians on startups and technology? And I think, you know, I'm asking really specifically around New South Wales, because, you know, we've dealt with LaunchVic, which is a Victorian government department. They've been amazing. You know, they've got, I think in the last budget, $180 million, and they've got a matching fund, and they've got support for angel networks. And, you know, we're a recipient for that. In fact, Amanda's a member of one of our groups. South Australia's got some initiatives as well. And it's felt harder in New South Wales because the political impetus is maybe just not there, or there's been this sort of slightly arrogant, you know, we're Sydney, so we don't need it. So
I've got a couple points on that. I think that we do actually have a very committed political support for what we want to do in the States for startups and scale-ups and high-growth technology companies. I think it's a really good point that for a long time we've not been great at talking about it, as opposed to, you know, colleagues down there at LaunchVic. But when I look at the aggregate of the different initiatives that we're doing in this space that sort of sit under my purview, when you start to add it up, there's some really exciting things, whether it be the minimum viable product grant that, you know, which has been really successful. You know, that's sort of $3 million a year. The COVID-19 R&D challenges that we've been rolling out, you know, that's a $11 million fund over the last 12 months. Whether it be our already announced and committed $48 million to Tech Central, which we were talking about before. But we do recognize there's a lot of other things that we need to be looking at. I kind of would throw the challenge back at yourself and others on this panel around, you know, where are some of the best ways for a government to be intervening in this ecosystem as we start to mature? Because I guess that's the key thing as well, which is I'm constantly looking at what is happening here from a funding perspective, customers, talent, et cetera, and working with the ecosystem, see where is the best way for government to provide that support going forward.
Kevin, have you got any views on that? Like, I mean, I'm sure you're reliant. I mean, yeah. We've got a story later on in R&D, but like, what's the best way that government can support people like you?
I mean, I guess a couple of comments I'm thinking about on this. One is, I think it's great to hear that you guys are also looking at scale-ups. I think so much of government assistance, at least historically, was always geared at that 0 to 1 phase, which, don't get me wrong, it's vitally important, but just because you've gotten the 0 to 1, there's still an enormous failure rate. And helping companies get through that next stage of actually being self-sustainable is incredibly hard. And often by that point, it's like, well, you've made it to your seed round. Off you go. Good luck. So I think that's great that there's an emphasis in this new initiative on the scale-up phase. In terms of what could the governments do to support? I mean, I think broadly, our experience has been really positive in that we have, you know, we use the R&D grant. We've participated in accelerating commercialization as well, which is, you know, federal government initiative. But I think the challenge is almost one of marketing. I think most companies just have no idea this is even available. It is very fragmented. You have to really put in the work to try and discover, I think, some of these initiatives and what's required. The cognitive load required to understand whether you're a right fit and what you have to do to participate in it is off-putting in my experience when talking to small companies that are just running around trying to keep the lights on all the time. And so I think that it's almost working more less on new initiatives and more on just making more people more aware of the available initiatives, because they are great. And I do think the government generally has its head in the right place and its heart in the right place and is doing a really good job. The final one I would say is around talent and almost getting in Melbourne and cities. It's an incredible place to be. It's an incredible place to set up a tech company. I am not, you know, Australian as my accent betrays. And yet I still see so many really talented people that have gone through, you know, the Australian education system, you know, run off to Silicon Valley or run off to London or whatever it is. And that's crazy. There should be a reverse brain drain. People should want to come out of their, you know, $5,000 a month, you know, shoebox in Soma and come to Sydney and be on the beach. And so I feel like if there's one opportunity that maybe hasn't been, or maybe it has, and I just don't know about it, but is making Australia this bastion for pulling talent in from overseas. I don't know why it doesn't happen more often. And that's something the United States excels at, getting people in through the university system and then keeping them there.
Yeah, and pulling some of the Aussie talent back. I mean, like Faden, you worked in San Francisco for what, 4 or 5 years in recruitment, and you know, you set up the Aussie, or helped set up the Aussie Founders Network. So you were focused on this is a problem. So are you seeing more people come back, and are we doing enough, to Kevin's point, about promoting that?
I think it's a really good point. And I think there's a lot of people coming back because of COVID, but not coming back because maybe the government's supporting it. I think LaunchVic do a really good job. It's one of their key tenets is about trying to draw talent back into the state. So I think they get it, you know. But I think New South Wales has been a destination for a long time, but maybe for the wrong demographic of people.
Yeah.
You know, the backpackers rather than the people that want to come to uni here and study a STEM course or something like that, or do a startup. And so, yeah, it's a little bit tricky. I mean, I think, you know, the interesting for me from what Jared was saying is COVID obviously has impacted plans to build, you know, this big, huge tech hub. And the future of work now is going to obviously impact that. I'd love to sort of just understand how the group is thinking about that, because it feels to me like not only are people going to be more diversified in terms of where they want to live and operate, but they're not going to sort of seek out these hubs that historically, you know, people have gone after. Yeah. Or maybe that's not, I don't know.
Yeah. Look, you missed it last week or 2 weeks ago, Faden, because you weren't here. You were swanning off, but we spent quite a chunk of time talking about the future of work. So yeah, look, I mean, I think if there's any valid points in that, then great, but we are almost 30 minutes in. So just really maybe quickly, Amanda, because like you're relatively new, I'd say, to this sector. I mean, you came out of corporate, but now immersing yourself in startups. So any observations as to how government's interfacing with this ecosystem?
I just underscore that I think LaunchVic is doing a fantastic job of not only communicating about the value of this space, but also taking action, like in, you know, the support they gained in the last budget from the Victorian government. I agree with Kevin that it's a confidence play, in that I think people want to be in the heart, in the hub, and that's Silicon Valley. So it's about really presenting Sydney in particular, that everyone knows better, so that it does become a hub, a global hub. And then, of course, everyone's passionate about being able to earn enough dollars. So is there a tax incentive on companies that are, you know, less than X turnover or less than X staff? So I think, you know, that's the only other piece that I'd look to.
Yeah. All right, let's maybe move on and talk a little bit about some of the local deals and news that's been going on. So one of the big funds, Artesian, has announced that they're set to launch a new AI accelerator. And a new $100 million fund. So this was in the AFR last week. So, yes. Yeah, Kevin, I don't know whether you're across this or whether you got a chance to look at this, but Artesian, I mean, they've got some agri stuff, but they seem to have the tentacles and everything, and they're doing a great job. So any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm very ignorant of this, right? I'm literally just seeing it right now as you mentioned it. We spoke with Artesian, you know, very, very early days. I think we were a little bit too soon for that, and they seem like great operators. So, you know, exciting to see another big 100 million plus round in Australia, and they seem like they're great. So that's fantastic. But I'll admit, I'm definitely a little bit out of my depth on this one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit. It's actually Andrew Lai, who used to, he's done some work with us in Melbourne. So he was running Tech Accelerator Sprotex. And I probably should have asked you this one, Amanda, first, because it is a Victorian setup. So this came, the new program, Bob AI, I think it's called, B-O-A-B. They've got money from the Victorian Launch Vic, along with $8 million in private capital. So it's pretty interesting. This, they've got directors Katrina Wallace, Tim Heasley, and Matthew Clunes Ross, who are both Artesian as well. So, hey, Amanda, any thoughts on this one?
Well, I mean, I agree with Kevin that they're really great operators. A long time ago, I used to work with some of them in an ANZ dealing room, and they definitely were impressive back then and remain so now. They are, as I understand it, one of the biggest investors into agri-tech in Australia. And I think this is the new area that they really want to dominate, and that they have absolutely put together a team that I think will allow them to do exactly that. But beyond that, I don't have anything.
Jared, any insights here?
Yeah, look, I think besides the fact I don't want to keep giving LaunchVic all the kudos on this podcast while I'm here, but no, I think they've done a great job. But what it shows is the opportunity for government and private capital to work together around key industries of the future for New South Wales. Australia. You know, I say here in New South Wales, we're continuing to look at, you know, what do we do to support, you know, AI as well. It's going to be a key driver for us and, you know, all of Australia. I think this will just be the start of what we'll see across this country around those collaborations between government, private capital on those industries of the future, you know, cyber, robotics, and you know, further down the line, quantum as well. And so I think it's really exciting development for us here in Australia.
Yeah. All right. Other news from the fund. So our innovation fund, which was set up by David Shane. So David was a guest on the main podcast. God, it must be, what, 6 months ago, Faden, I think we interviewed him. Lovely guy. Like one of the favorite guests I've had on the show. Maybe it's because he gave me a bottle of wine. And, you know, we were walking out his front door because I did it in his house, and he had a wine rack there, and I pointed out this Amherst wine from New Zealand. I said, oh, that's the best wine I've ever tasted. And he gave me the bottle and he said, oh, you should have it because you're going to enjoy it. And I'm like, you are the best guest ever. But he's also a lovely guy. So they have just closed, well, they haven't closed it actually, but they've announced that they've raised $80 million in their latest fund. Another news is they've just hired my ex-boss at AWS. So when I was there for 4 years, Paul Migliorini was in charge of the Australian New Zealand operation, and I sat under him running the startup team. So he's joined as a venture partner. So pretty fantastic outcome all around here, because they are great players in the ecosystem. You know, we wearing my Gelix hat, we've co-invested with them in a couple of deals, and just really, really good people. Any thoughts on this one? Anyone know these individuals? Kevin? No, Kevin's frozen. Jared.
Yeah, look, I'd second your comments there on David. We're fortunate to have him work with us in developing our R&D action plan here in New South Wales. They're a really great guy, and you know, they're doing some really exciting things, and particularly with you look at some of their links to the Israeli ecosystem and some of the being able to bridge sort of the you know, Israel and Australian markets. I think they're well set up for the future, and it's a great outfit.
All right, cool.
Yeah, I quickly echo that. I spoke to David Shane back in 2016, 2017 as well, and fantastic guy, great supporter of innovation, and really excited to see them continue to expand. I think that's great for Aussie tech.
Yeah. All right, Amanda, I think you were suggesting that you didn't know these individuals, so... No, that's all right. No problem with that. What else we talk about? Mars. So NASA managed to get another robot to Mars. I mean, it's an astonishing piece of engineering, what they managed to do. I mean, like just getting something to Mars and landing it. I think in the history of Mars landings, only about, I think 40% of them fail. NASA's had a pretty good track record with this, and again, they've managed to land this one without any problems. And it's a super advanced rover. It's going to detect whether there's signs of life up there. So, I mean, I'm not sure there's much in the way of local startup news for that one, but I just think it's great for everyone. Like, it's just gives us all hope that there's stuff that we can do that goes beyond just making money. Amanda, any thoughts on this one? Excited?
Yeah, I think, I'm very excited. I think the timing is perfect. We've sort of got the, it's sort of this sense of hope that's coming. You know, we've had a change of leadership in the US. We've got vaccinations coming. We're landing on Mars. It sort of feels like, hey, we can actually do this. Whereas 2020 didn't sort of feel like that. So it definitely, I think, spurs people on and underscores the importance of STEM.
Jared?
Yeah, look, I'd second that. Just what an amazing feat of human achievement. Though I did see a very funny comment on Twitter today with this being the potential Fire Festival 2024 for Elon and Jarrell. when you see that video, look, I think that it's an amazing achievement, but it also continues to raise the importance of thinking about, well, what are we doing here on our current planet where we are to make sure that we don't have to escape to Mars.
Yeah. Kevin, you're waving your hand here. What's what are you thinking?
Well, my father was a veteran of the original moon space program. He worked privately, but he worked with NASA and all these companies.
Oh, that's 60s, cool.
70s, 80s. I remembered very distinctly when The shuttle program was shut down, and everyone sort of thought, oh, this is kind of the end. Space is just, you know, it's not really that interesting anymore. And so as a space brat, as someone who sort of grew up with it, I love it. I think it's really exciting. That both privately and through NASA, you know, there's suddenly this renewed interest in space. And I agree with what you're saying. I can't put a specific point on why it's important or say what we're going to get out of it, but not everything is about, you know, next quarter's results, and not everything is about, you know, marginal improvements in efficiencies. It's fun to see kind of, you know, big swings at a human scale about understanding the universe. And maybe I'm just biased from a youth of looking at that stuff. But I think it's pretty cool.
No, I think it's great. I mean, I think research and exploration is fundamental to humans. I mean, it's like we like discovering things and checking out new things. So, yeah, I thought this was amazing. All right, let's keep rolling. There was an announcement from Skip Capital. Skip is run by Kim Jackson, who is the other half of Scott Farquhar of Atlassian fame. So they have some money to invest. I mean, I think I don't know what the current net wealth is, but I think it's around $20 billion that family is worth. So, you know, I know all of that obviously is available for investment, but you know, the point is there's a bunch of capital to invest there. But it sounds like they've actually spun off a separate fund. So they're talking about an infrastructure fund with $100 million behind it. So, yeah, pretty interesting announcement here. Any I don't have any insights in this one. I know Kim, but I haven't spoken to her about this. So, Amanda, you're off mute, so I'm going to pick on you.
Well, I think it's, the Essential Infrastructure Fund is you know, a great another example of you know, sort of landing on Mars, in that we're really trying to look at the new frontier in science. And it just feels good, as well as hopefully in the end having positive outcomes for investors, but also for the planet. So it looks like it's going into, you know, solar, wind, recycling. And I was very interested to see that they're currently, the federal government's currently looking at trying to standardise the recycling requirements across Australia. In our federated government, that may be challenging, but if they can do that, then speeds up this standardisation that allows us to really leverage that recycling infrastructure and get less waste sitting in Australian land.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. And it's great seeing, you know, a family like this just, you know, lean in to try and do good. I mean, it's Mike has done it with Grok, and maybe, you know, I don't know, it's fair to say he's slightly ahead. I think he's probably put more of his wealth in play in terms of investments than Skip has. Yeah, and I don't know what the numbers are. I mean, I saw in this article that Skip had invested $100 million last year. But you know, when you compare $100 million to $20 billion in net wealth, plus the proceeds that they're going to get from their investments in safety culture and Canva and all the rest of it, I mean, they're definitely net up, and it's part of the challenge is just deploying this amount of capital. Jared, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, look, I think there's a couple of thoughts. Firstly, for us, you know, this is as Australians sitting here in this ecosystem, it's just great to see that, you know, those that have been as successful as Scott and Mike continuing to invest back into, you know, future technologies, and particularly those that are addressing our, you know, some of those biggest challenges that we have and that we face. So, you know, and I think to Amanda's point, you know, they're looking at the circular economy and other things that we can do to look at how we handle waste and recycling is going to be critical industries for us, not just across Australia, but particularly us in New South Wales as well.
Kevin, any thoughts on this one? Searching for the mute button gives me a chance to ask Faden. I mean, Faden, this is pretty cool. Like we have known Scott and Mike for a while, and they're just such great players in this ecosystem. So, and again, this is just a continuation of that, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not sure the question was
there. There's no question, it's just encouragement to comment.
I think to your previous point, they distribute a lot more capital than is publicly known. And so I don't think we'll ever actually know how much they do, but we've got to be thankful for it because it's awesome to see. And they're definitely driving the recycling of capital that they've made out of Atlassian, not only into the startup sector, but into a whole bunch of different areas such as renewable,
which we've talked about a lot on the show. So it's just awesome to see. Now, I'm sure this is just the tip of the iceberg. They're pretty private individuals and they don't seek publicity in any kind of way.
No, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, we respect them for that. All right, let's keep going. There's some more good news out the local ecosystem. So an early investment for both Airtree and Blackbird. In fact, it was a StartMate business. Faden, I think you and I may be tiny investors in this one, but Allevio, they were just were acquired for, I think, around $15 million. So both Blackbird and Airtree, I think, returned three and a half times their money on this one. So it's good just to see that, you know, there's activity in terms of the exits and, you know, decent exits. It's not, I mean, it's not a $1 billion exit, but it's still a good exit for these guys. So I don't know whether you saw this one, Amanda, but as a early investor, you're always looking for the exits, I guess. So I suppose this must make you feel pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. It absolutely, it did. You know, the 15 mil, as you say, isn't exciting, but it's fantastic to see that they've probably learnt a hell of a lot by building this company and building a team. And you know, after their earn-out period, it could be that they then, you know, branch out into something else with all those skills behind them. So it's a really good story.
All right. Another good news story, certainly for Bevan Slattery. So Bevan was the co-founder with Steve Baxter and Pipe Networks a long time ago. So made some pretty good money back then. He bet he invested $2 million on rent.com.au. And it turned into $11 million in 7 days, which sounds pretty impressive. Not quite sure how he managed to do that. Yeah, I think it was an ASX listed business. So I don't know. Does anyone get any thoughts on this one? Or is this just one of these ones we'd mention it and move on? Amanda, I'm sure getting a 5x return in a week is pretty good.
Oh, look, I'd love it. I'd love it. Haven't yet done that, but there's a new benchmark.
That is a new benchmark. Jared, any thoughts on this one?
No, I think I might be reaching out for his contact details to manage my money. That's quite a return in 7 days. So, yeah, look, it's just one of those things that there's some amazing opportunities being presented right now for different people.
Yeah, it definitely
immense liquidity that's there.
Yeah, and it definitely feels that there's just so much in the way in these sort of get rich quick stories. I mean, not necessarily schemes, but you know, Bitcoin's been in this crazy tear and. You had the GameStop story and you've got, you know, Tesla. I mean, it's just everywhere you look, there are stories of just this vast, vast wealth being made by, you know, in many cases, ordinary people. So,
and I think it's in some ways, sorry, a self-fulfilling prophecy. I see that Slattery's taken a $2.5 million a stake in a cloud-based imaging venture and the share price doubled just because he'd done that. So, you know, in some ways, I think we're right to have him invest our money, Jared.
I think one of the unsold stories here is that he's just such an amazing entrepreneur. He's done so well. We actually haven't had him on the show, which is quite interesting. And again, he's sort of, he's in that Queensland kind of little ecosystem up there we don't see a lot of, but he must have 5 or 6 different ventures on the go at the moment. And some of them are just really significant, such as the private sort of like NBN business, cable business that he's kind of launching, which I can't remember the details on. But yeah, it's super, super exciting.
Does he like burning coal the same way that Steve Baxter does?
No, they actually went to school together and they were best mates. And they sort of fell out after NextDC, but I hear they're kind of, they're back talking, but they're totally different people.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, we should definitely get him on the show. So it's a good, good point. All right, let's keep rolling. What else we got? Aussie FinTech Thrive smashes equity crowdfunding record and raised $1 million in under 3 hours. CFO in your pocket. Yeah, we haven't heard too much about equity crowdfunding recently. I mean, this is pretty interesting here. I think the previous record was a medical cannabis business. So, yeah, again, it's just the stories of the amount of cash being out there and desperate to go into these things is just amazing. So, you know, Amanda, you're an investor. So, I mean, what are you thinking when you see stuff like this?
Well, the first point was, you know, how's the DD? It's just amazing. And it really is part of this, you know, as you say, there's all this cash lying around. People are sitting sick of the 1% to 2% returns and they're hungry for risk. And I think when you overlay that with this concept of sort of community and crowdsourcing of funds, together with, you know, this sense of democratization of investment markets and the knowledge and the analysis of it, I think it was perfect timing for them. But as the founder said, even they were shocked. They actually didn't believe it.
Yeah. I mean, there's another story kind of along the same, slightly along the same vein, but much larger scale, because it's in the US, and it was about the founder, 31-year-old female founder of Bumble, Whitney Wolf Heard, and they've just listed, and at the last company valuation, she was worth $1.5 billion. So she's the youngest woman ever to take a company public in the US. So, I mean, there's just a lot to love about this story. I mean, it's just the ultimate startup story, I suppose. And it's great to see a young woman who, you know, are disproportionately underrepresented in funding and the tech ecosystem generally. So, yeah, Amanda, you must be feeling happy about this one.
Oh, I am. It's a fabulous story. It also is a reminder for me to sort of check in on your biases around what you invest in, because, you know, a dating app is not where I'd go, but she has absolutely seen that gap in the market, which is giving the power back to the woman so that she feels safe going out on the date. And it's worked. And of course it's not that simple. She's had to execute and has obviously done so exceptionally well. So hats off and well done.
Yeah, no, I loved seeing that story. Kevin, do you know this woman?
Yeah. I do not. I am familiar with Bumble and plenty of its users, but no. But yeah, as you said, hats off. I think all these stories, you know, it's great to see. It's great to see people that are getting wins and validating, investments into what are high risk things, but high risk companies that can make huge impact. And I would also say hats off to Thrive, for looking at alternative funding. I think that that's something that companies miss on all too often. Venture capital is amazing. And, you know, particularly for certain businesses at certain stages, venture capital is the best way to go. But there's lots of other business models, and there's lots of business models that don't fit the venture model but are still legitimate, viable businesses. And if there's other ways that they can prove themselves, that they can get off the ground, whether it's through equity crowdfunding or angel investing or whatever it is, that's great, because that's creating value in the world that might otherwise not have made it through, you know, a traditional VC investment process. So good on them for, going a little bit off the beaten path and having success with it.
Yeah. Jared, any thoughts on Bumble?
Yeah, look, I think to Ian, to your point earlier, which is, it's female founders and what we could do to support entrepreneurship is a real focus area. And it's something sort of myself and my team have been thinking a lot about, particularly, you know, because of COVID and, you know, women being more impacted by the impacts of COVID and on the economy than men. And so I'd say for us in the next 12 months, we're going to be putting and rolling out quite a few female founder focused programs. And we'll hopefully be able to share a couple of those in a couple of weeks. But I think it's great, and it's a great example, and hats off to them.
Yeah. All right, look, we're almost 55 minutes in, so we've probably only got time for one or two more stories. Faden, anything that's jumping, like what's jumping out for you in this run sheet? We could talk about Stone and Chalk taking over Ost Cyber. It's interesting to see Stone and Chalk, which is a kind of, it started as just a, not just, but an incubator or co-working space for fintech startups, branched into more general. It opened in Melbourne, took over with a space in Adelaide. Alex Skandara is pretty amazing at what he's doing. And it's interesting that he's buying up new businesses. So, Jared, sorry, Faden, I didn't even give you a chance to talk there. That's very bad of me.
Normal. Actually, the thing for me, I'm not across that one, the stone and chalk one, really, but it sounds like they are taking over the world. I think the one thing we haven't mentioned, which was pretty cool, that we're talking about briefly before the show, was that the Ford only selling EVs in the United Kingdom by Europe by 2030, and this massive move that seems to be going towards electric vehicles at the moment, which is super exciting.
Oh, it is. And I think, like seeing government take the lead in that is super important, especially the US. The US government saying it's only going to buy electric down the track. I mean, that's compelling. I mean, everyone's got to pay attention to that. So, sorry, Jared, I think you might want to jump in on the stone and chalk point there.
Yeah, I was thought as having stone and chalk a couple levels below me here in the Sydney Startup Hub and being one of our really valued incubators here. You know, look, I think I'd agree with you, Alex, it is great. And so is Michelle Price, who's been running off cyber. They're a big partner of ours in New South Wales government as well. I think this gets to a little bit to some of the themes we were talking about before with Artisian and there and AI, which is, you know, cyber is another key focus industry of the future for us in Australia. I think Alex is always got a great eye to where things are going, where the focus is going to be, both from a government perspective, but more broadly from a startup and innovation perspective. And I think those two organizations together are going to do a lot to continue to advance our cyber capabilities. And as we try and continue to incubate a lot of very talented cyber startups, not just here in New South Wales, but across the country.
Yeah. All right. Look, I think we might call it there. Faden, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No. That was great.
Yeah. No, it was great. Really enjoyed that. We covered a lot of ground. Kevin, thanks for coming to us from your holiday location with slightly patchy internet. I'm not sure where are you?
I'm in Melbourne, so I should.
In Melbourne. Okay. Well, there you go. That's a good holiday location.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to be on. It was a lot of fun.
It's a pleasure. Did you get to go to the Australian Open final?
I did not. I went to the women's final.
Nice.
Actually. And it was awesome. It was incredible to be there. And, my first time to the Aussie Open, so I'm glad I got there before I moved overseas.
Yeah, Amanda, you must have been to that a couple of times.
Oh, I love it, but I also love that I'm not hosting there. So I look forward to going maybe next year, COVID free, and just on my personal account. It's a fabulous atmosphere, and it's another example of sort of this concept of precincts that Jared was speaking about that I think Melbourne's done really well.
Yeah. Well, Kevin and Amanda, thank you. And Jared as well. Look, thanks for being the first ever guest from New South Wales government. And thanks. Yeah. Thanks for giving us some insight as to the way you're thinking and what's going on. So yeah, congrats and let us know how we can help.
No, thanks for having me. And that was a brilliant discussion, and I look forward to hearing more great ideas of what we can do as a government to support the innovation ecosystem, not just here in New South Wales, but across the country.
All right, cool. And Faden, well done. We will be back in 2 weeks with some more news, but I think Faden, you and I have got a couple more episodes of some great guests to pump out before then. But in the meantime, thank you everyone, Amanda, Kevin, Jared, and thank you everyone for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.